Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome to the program. A wonderful Wednesday to you. It's the 10th of April, 2024. And that can only mean one thing. We're not only in the second week of Easter, but it's also Masters Week, which is a pretty special week for me. We're going to have our Masters picks later in the program. We're also going to talk about five ways relationships impact your happiness. This is absolutely crucial for us to know. 888-914-9149. That's a toll-free line to call and talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show, sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. We're so thankful for their support of our listener line, 888-914-9149. You can also email me at Cale. That's the address, Cale@relevantradio.com, Cale@relevantradio.com, and find me on the X app at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. All right, let me get right into this, because all of us want to be happy, right? St. Thomas Aquinas said that the reason why anybody does anything is because they think it's going to make them more happy. Even criminals commit crimes because they think somehow I'm going to be happier ultimately through this. Sinners commit sins because they are at least looking for a short-term hit of happiness, but they'll never find joy without Jesus, right? So corny, but it's true. Jesus first, others second, yourself last. That's how to find true joy. And we're all looking for it. And one newsletter that I subscribe to, I don't know if you guys subscribe to email newsletters. I subscribe to a few of them. One that I really like, and I've talked about it before, is written by Sahil Bloom, and it's called The Curiosity Chronicle. And I'm a pretty curious person, and he delves deeply into things that he's curious about. And he got pretty curious in today's newsletter about this concept of happiness. And he actually had a conversation with one of the leading happiness experts in the world, Dr. Robert Waldinger. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy before, but I'm going to explain who he is in just a second. So Sahil Bloom sat down with him for about 2 hours, and he filmed the conversation. He's going to have the video up later. But in his newsletter today, he just talked about some really impactful takeaways from this conversation. And these are really things that we can use right now. They are five ways that relationships can impact our happiness, and they're very, very actionable. So Dr. Robert Waldinger, he's the director of the Harvard Study of Adult Development. By the way, that is the longest running study that there is about health, life, happiness in the entire world for adults. Now, originally when it started some years ago, there were about 700 or so people in the study, and they follow them throughout the years, and now there's over 1,300 plus involved. Dr. Robert Waldinger has a TED Talk that's been seen about 50 million times. 50 million, unbelievable. He wrote a New York Times bestseller called The Good Life, and he had five really actionable things that we could do to use our relationships to help us to find true happiness. And the first lesson that Dr. Waldinger gave was actually really shocking. And even the researchers at Harvard were really surprised about this finding. And it really has to do with our health. Do you know what the greatest predictor of our physical health and well-being is? When you get to 80 years old, and I think... And you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. You can call in 888-914-9149. The average lifespan for men and women, it's somewhere in the 80s, I think, right now in the United States, with women tending to live a little bit longer than men. But the single greatest predictor of being physically healthy at age 80 is something that you wouldn't think. It has nothing to do with keeping low cholesterol levels, getting your blood pressure under control, making sure you're eating okay. The number one predictor of being physically healthy at age 80 was having relationship satisfaction. So the quality of your relationships, the strength of your relationships, that is absolutely crucial, even on your physical health. Now, that actually makes a lot of sense to me, because we are, of course, holistic, unified persons. We believe in a body, brain, soul unity. And this is really what this word shalom means. You know, when Jesus says, peace be with you, shalom is really what he's talking about, this Hebrew concept. And it's more than just the absence of conflict when we talk about shalom. It's not just peace, like most people think about it. It's really total wellness. It's a total harmony of mind, brain, body, soul, all together with the world and with God. And so there is really a connection, I think, between our mental health and our physical health, and our spiritual health, even, and our physical health. And I remember when I first signed up with my physician, and it's hard for people to find a good doctor these days. I'm very, very grateful that my personal physician, Dr. Ken, he's not the Dr. Ken from TV, by the way, different guy, but he made me fill out a survey when I first started seeing him. And it asked a lot of really interesting questions, because it wasn't just about your health background. Were you ever a smoker? That type of thing. What's your weight? What's your height? Any family history of disease? That kind of thing. He asked a lot of questions about psychological health. And I think mental health is something that is being less and less stigmatized as we know more about it now. People are opening up more about struggles with mental health. But also, he asked a lot of questions in this initial survey of his patients that were really spiritual in nature. And you might be tempted to say, he's prying into my spiritual life. But actually, he sees these things as very, very connected. And I think it's kind of groundbreaking that he was doing stuff like this. Not too many physicians do that. Maybe they do now, but I don't think it was quite common some years ago when I started seeing Dr. Ken. All right, so that's lesson number one. Five really surprising ways that relationships can impact your happiness. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. All right, what's the second lesson? And again, this is from a conversation that the writer Sahil Bloom had with an incredible researcher from Harvard, Dr. Robert Waldingham, who is, of course, the director of the largest study of human happiness in the world, Dr. Robert Waldinger. Life, happiness, health, all that stuff is really kind of tied up into this. So the second lesson is loneliness kills, literally. And it's amazing that last year in 2023, Vivek Murthy. Now, if you don't know who he is, you can be excused for that. He's actually the U.S. Surgeon General currently, but he put out a report last year in 23, and it was called "The Epidemic of Loneliness and Isolation," and it had a lot of interesting data points in it. And here's some stats that jumped out to Sahil Bloom. He said that the amount of time that teenagers today are spending in person with their friends is down 70% over the last 20 years, over the last two decades. It's down 70%. That's a shocking stat. But I guess it's not really that shocking, because everybody's online now. Everybody's on social media. This was not a thing 20 years ago. But now, 70%, that's how much time teenagers are spending in person with their friends. It's down 70%. And I don't think that's a good trend. We human beings, of course, we're social animals, if you will. We are ensouled animals. We have an eternal soul. It's what makes us different from the animals. We have a rational soul. And we kind of are made for relationships. You look at the pages of the book of Genesis. Man was not created to be alone. It is not good for the man to be alone. And so, even though he was surrounded by animals at the time, he was still quite lonely, because there was no one like him. And then, of course, God solves the problem by creating Woo man, whoa man, as Scott Hahn likes to say. She was beautiful, Eve. And so Adam now had a companion. And we can get into the theology of the body. Actually, we'll talk a little bit about theology of the body tomorrow on the Faith Explained show at 12:30 Central. And that's really important, because we are a body-soul unity. Again, God created us to live in an embodied way, but also in a relational way. And so that's a troubling trend for teens. And of course, they need that social development. We saw during COVID, when schools were closed and kids were not, and adults as well, were isolated, that took a major, major toll, not only on mental health, probably physical health too, but also just on development, human development, children who missed essentially 2 years or so of school are very, very behind in certain ways, especially socially. Their social development is way off track. And it's been so skewed by these bizarre online relationships that are not at all like the real world, quote unquote. You will say things about people and to people online, maybe sometimes hiding behind a fake internet name. You know, keyboard warrior will say a lot of rude things to people that you would never say in person, of course, face to face. Anyways, it's not a good trend. It's not a good trend. But even adults as well, 60% of adults, according to this report from the Surgeon General of the United States, 60% of adults say that they do not feel connected to others. And it's an especially huge problem when it comes to men. The number of men who say that they have no close friends, zero close friends, is up 5 times since 1990. Okay, so back in 1990, 3% of men in the United States said that they had close friends. Said they had zero close friends. So only 3% said they had no friends, you know, that were close at all. Now that's up to 15%. So that's a 5 times increase since 1990. And that resonates too with what I'm seeing. And again, like anecdotally, just people that I know, and I'm not talking about necessarily people who are loners or people who have generally good social skills, people who are successful in life, who have solid relationships, maybe solid family lives going on too, but they don't really have, a lot of guys don't have a lot of close male friends. One priest, he had actually coined this term called FDD, friendship deficit disorder. And a lot of men really struggle with this, that they didn't really have anybody that they could consider a true friend that they could open up to about some of their problems in life. We guys, and I don't know what you think about this, but we tend to have more acquaintances than true friends, people that we work with, coworkers, maybe some chit chat with neighbors. There are people in our, I don't know, local softball league that we might sort of hang out with from time to time, maybe have a beer with, watch sports with. And sadly, for a lot of guys, the only other guy friends they have are people that really spur them on to vice, not good male friends who spur them on to virtue. So having this true friend or lack of true friends is really a pain point, I think, for a lot of men. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. All right, so that was lesson number 2. From the Harvard study, which was super shocking, research by Dr. Robert Waldinger. All right, so lesson number 3 of the 5 is also a bit of a shocker. Making social fitness a priority. Making social fitness a priority. How do you fight back against loneliness? This loneliness, and not just men, women are experiencing loneliness as well. And by the way, chronic loneliness can increase risk of very, very serious physical problems by a lot. It's been found to increase dementia risk by up to 50% being chronically lonely. That is not a good stat. Loneliness truly does kill. And in fact, in the Surgeon General's report, there's sort of a graph that was really, really, when you see it in visual terms laid out, lack of social connection is worse for your health than smoking 15 cigarettes a day. I don't know how many cigarettes are in a pack right now, but that's got to be at least a pack a day. It could be wrong. I don't know. It's been a while. It's way worse for you than drinking 6 alcoholic drinks a day, which I also don't recommend. A 6-pack a day does not keep the doctor away. But lacking social connection, loneliness is far worse for you physically than even that. Drinking 6 alcoholic drinks a day, which is not a good thing to do. It's worse than not exercising, inactivity. It's worse than being overweight, obese. It's worse than any kind of environmental pollution that you might be exposed to. Lacking social connection is truly a killer. So how do you fight back against it? Well, this is where lesson 3 comes in. How do you make it a priority? Well, Dr. Waldinger says that you need something called social fitness. And you have to think about it the same way that you think about your physical fitness. And sometimes it's just a matter of just getting going. It's just starting. And maybe for a lot of you, folks out there, guys and gals, maybe you used Lent as an opportunity to maybe take some of those baby steps. And I mean that quite literally. Maybe just even going for a little walk. Studies have shown that even just going for a slightly brisk walk after a meal, even for 5-10 minutes, can have some huge payoff, kind of an outsized payoff for you. So sometimes just tiny little actions that we can take every day, just trying to get 1% better maybe every day, it has a compounding, impact on our life. Just like compound interest, as Mark Twain said, it was the eighth wonder of the world. Well, compounding little aspects of fitness can help us physically, but social fitness can help as well. Do little things every day to make social fitness a priority, to fight back against chronic loneliness. So here's a few ways that you can do this. And Sahil Bloom mentions a couple of options here. You can think something nice about somebody, and that's fine. If something strikes you, oh yeah, that was really nice that my friend Tim, you know, sent me a birthday card or something. Well, you can actually call Tim and let him know, hey, that was really nice what you did, or thank you for that, gift basket that you left at my front door at Easter time, something like that. Let whatever you think about somebody that's kind, let them know right then and there. You can tell your spouse one thing, or your children, one thing that you appreciate about them every day. Make it genuine. You have old friends you probably haven't talked to in a long time that you need to reestablish a connection with, and you'd like to do that. Well, reach out to that person. Why not catch up? That dinner with friends, or maybe that golfing trip with buddies that you were thinking about setting up, when is that ever going to happen? Why not make it a priority? So these things can really compound in terms of our relationships, and our happiness will be greatly impacted as a result as well. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Okay, what's lesson 4 from Dr. Robert Waldinger and this great Harvard study on human happiness? How can your relationships help you be more happy? Point number 4 is you need to check your energy to improve your life. So this is a hack that Dr. Waldinger gives. He says this: after you consume some sort of content, you know, maybe you're watching a movie, or maybe you're listening to a podcast, or listening to the Cale Clark Show. After you consume a piece of content, assess your energy level. Okay, when you listen to the show, did that make you feel more energized, or did it drain you? And sometimes there's a lot of bad news out there in the culture, and sometimes when we watch programs that kind of focus on, and let's face it, there is a lot of negative news in the world. We live in a world full of sinners. That's true. God is still in control. But you can feel a lot of angst, especially in a tight political year, in an election year. There's a lot of strife in the culture. You can feel drained by all of this. And so if you are feeling that way, you might want to dial back that type of content that you're consuming. You might want to dial it back just a little bit, what you're consuming, if it's making you feel really emotionally drained. Now, if it's something that makes you feel energized and makes you feel better, you might want to double down on that. But Sahil Bloom says you can apply that hack to relationships as well. When you're spending time with certain people, there are certain people who are energy vampires. And I know people sometimes need help. They really do need help. They might need clinical help sometimes to deal with some issues that they have in their personal lives. But sometimes there are certain friends and friendships that maybe just aren't that good for us. And you know what I'm talking about. Sometimes when you're spending time with somebody, you can just feel drained. You can just feel drained because it just takes a lot out of you. And then other friends, other relationships can make you feel a lot more energized. And I'm not suggesting that we only spend time with people that make us feel good, because again, we have to serve all, love all and serve all. It's the Hard Rock Cafe motif for life, I guess you could say. If we have a choice, we can spend more time with people who give us more energy, more life. And I think that's especially true when it comes to consuming content as well, not just relationships, but even these virtual relationships. I have a close friend who, he uses a certain social media, I'll just say what it is, it's Facebook. He has a love-hate relationship with Facebook. He uses it a lot. He posts a lot of stuff about himself, his family, what's going on in his life. I find a lot of social media can be purely narcissistic. There's no question. But sometimes he has said to me, you know, I actually don't feel good sometimes using this platform. I'm not saying this person's a narcissistic person, but Why do you feel bad? Well, because I look at pictures and stories online about things that these people are doing, trips that they're taking, things that are going on. And I find myself feeling jealous. I find myself feeling envy. I don't like the way it makes me feel. And then when I'm done using it, I just feel horrible about my own life. Okay, a couple things there. Number one, what people are posting, it's the absolute most sanitized version of their lives. They're not telling you about their deep, dark problems, or it's not like they're airing their confessions, nor should they, to the general public. So it's not really real life, number one. But that's just the nature of the beast. And those who run those services, and yesterday's episode with Professor Mike Ryle talking about AI, he had some very, very chilling statements about how the tech bros in the world who run these services, they know full well what the algorithms can do to people and how emotions and lives can be manipulated. And they don't even let their own children use this stuff. That's by design. So it's a feature, not a bug in the system. So you have to be very, very concerned about these things overall. Okay, so what's the last one? This is the last point, and we got to take a break here, but I'd love to hear what you guys think on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Okay, point number five. Five ways relationships can impact your happiness. Dr. Robert Waldinger from Harvard, the longest running human happiness study, he was asked by Sahil Bloom, what did you find out about toxic relationships? Well, the most toxic relationships that you can get into are what he calls ambivalent relationships. What does that mean? This is kind of fascinating. So ambivalent relationships, these are people who are sometimes supportive of you and sometimes they're demeaning of you. And that's actually worse for you than just having totally bad relationships. Why is that? Well, if somebody just doesn't like you, and that's going to happen in life. As St. Jose Maria Escrivá said, you know, you're not a dollar bill to be liked by everyone. You find a dollar bill on the street, everybody loves that. But sometimes just for whatever reason, some people aren't going to like you. If they don't like you and they're not in favor of you and they're hard on you all the time, well, that's in one way, it's a lot easier to deal with. Not saying it's a good thing. It's a lot easier to deal with than an ambivalent relationship where sometimes the person is feeling loved, supported, but then there's a flip. And then at some point, something sets them off, and then they're harsh towards you. Then they're negative towards you. Because when they're loving towards you, you kind of open up to them, kind of like a flower. And yeah, oh, this is a great thing. You become vulnerable, but then that demeaning behavior, when they do it, it cuts even deeper than from an enemy, let's say. Wounds from a friend can really, really hurt in that sense. So these ambivalent relationships can be worse for you than purely demeaning relationships. So if you have people in your life like that who kind of are Jekyll and Hyde towards you, you might want to reduce some of the oxygen you're giving those people, the energy that you're giving to people. So this is the great insight of the study, that relationships have such an impact on happiness, even physical health. It's unbelievable. And an anthropologist named Robin Dunbar, who did a lot of research on really the limits that you can have in terms of stable social relationships. How many can one person really contain? That's a great question. He said this, quote, "By far the biggest medical surprise of the past decade has been the extraordinary number of studies showing that the single biggest predictor of your psychological and physical health and well-being is the number and quality of close friendships that you have." So if you have good friends, you need to invest in them. If you don't have good friends, you need to start looking to find some. And of course, the greatest friend of all is our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, who is absolutely for us 100%. He absolutely has our best interests at heart. We got to get into a great relationship with him through prayer, through the sacraments, through knowledge of the faith, through the church. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show right after this. 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. Hello, friends. This is not Jim Nance, but this is a tradition unlike any other. Relevant Radio so proudly presents The Cale Clark Show. And yes, it is that time of year. It is Masters Week, and I'm so excited. You hear that beautiful theme. It's called Augusta by Dave Loggins. I don't know if he's any relation to Kenny Loggins. I have no idea. But we got to make our Masters picks for this year. So in just a moment, I'm going to be joined by producer Jim Shaper, associate producer Patrick Alog, as we talk about the 2024 Masters, what some of the big storylines are, who do we think is going to win. But one poignant story that's really come out of this year's tournament was the return of a guy who finished 14th last year, his best finish ever at the Masters, the 2019 U.S. Open champion, Gary Woodland. Just 3 weeks after his best finish ever at Augusta, he was playing in Mexico, and something really terrible happened to him. He started experiencing crazy nightmares, anxiety attacks, fear, a feeling like he was falling. For a lot of people, the worst dream, the worst nightmare they can ever have is that they're falling. And you always wake up right before you hit the ground. But this was no laughing matter at all. And Jeff Darlington from ESPN had an incredible piece on SportsCenter about what happened to Gary Woodland. I want you to listen to this clip.
Doctors discovered a lesion similar to a tumor growing on Woodland's brain.
I go meet with a specialist, and he explained what was going on. You're not going crazy. Those aren't nightmares and panic attacks. Those are seizures. And the fear and everything you're seeing, this lesion on your brain is on the part of your brain that controls fear and anxiety. And the thing that made it worse, too, was I have this lesion on my brain, on the part of the brain that controls fear and anxiety. So it's just pressing on it. So the fear just grew. And even when the doc told me I'm not dying, I have something in my head that's telling me I'm dying. And it was awful.
It truly was awful. And Gary Woodland tried to manage this with medication. And it's interesting that, I mean, there's so much about the brain that I think remains somewhat of a mystery, but this lesion pressing on the part of his brain, controlling anxiety and fear, I can't imagine what that would be like. As I said a few days ago, I'm a guy who struggles with anxiety, especially when I'm standing over a shaky putt to beat my pals. But no, he was playing on the PGA Tour, and he kept playing through this. He tried medications, but everything that the doctors were giving him was just making him extremely tired. And they upped his meds and made him even more tired. And he realized he couldn't go on like this. So he decided to do something that not a lot of people would have done. He decided to undergo brain surgery to remove the lesions. Again, here's Jeff Darlington from ESPN with Gary Woodland.
What risk was involved with surgery?
Once surgery became real 5 days out, I'm like, if this goes wrong, I'm dead. What if I never play golf again? What if I can't hold my kids again?
Because of the risks of the brain surgery, Woodland wrote letters to his wife and each of his three children, placed them in a secure location, and told his wife to find them if something went wrong.
Writing a letter for future is one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. To tell my girls that there's nothing more that I'd want to do than walk them down the aisle. To tell my son I'm not going to see him be what he wants to be. To tell my wife how much she meant to me, and I wouldn't have changed anything.
Wow, that's incredibly powerful. Writing letters to your children. Gary Woodland has two girls, two young girls and a boy. and his wife, if I don't get through the surgery, here's what I want you to know. Here's how I care about you. Here's how I feel about you. That is a real memento mori moment while you're still alive. This idea of remembering our death. Sister Teresa Alethea Noble, friend of the program, she's been on the show before talking about this. She's been so amazing writing about this and just helping people to understand this reality of death that we're all going to face one day. But not everybody has the opportunity to say what they want to say to their loved ones before they die. And I'm happy to report to you that Gary Woodland's family never had to open those letters. In fact, his craniotomy procedure was very successful. They were able to remove the lesion on his brain. It left a baseball-sized hole that had to be stitched up. And in the video, you can see it's almost Frankensteinian, if you will. All these stitches, speaking of a baseball, his head looks like a gigantic baseball. All these stitches on the side of his head, but he is totally recovered. He seems to have everything intact mentally, psychologically, his memory, and all the symptoms are now gone, and he can live a normal life. And you can imagine how thankful he is to be back on the beautiful fairways of Augusta National Golf Course and just simply to be alive. I thought that was a really interesting storyline going into the 2024 Masters. Want to bring in right now Patrick Alog, producer Jim Shaper. We're going to talk about our picks, what they are. Not that you should go with our picks here. That don't go to the sports books with these ones, but we always do this. It's a tradition that we have on the show. We always make picks for the major championships. Yeah, go ahead, Patrick.
I was gonna say, do we even remember who won last year's, and not the tournament itself, but who was closest?
I don't remember who. Actually, our picks
we could
were.
Probably look in the archives and
okay I thought maybe you had them, but yeah.
No, we, I should have.
I don't think any of us got it right, that's for sure. But but I will say this, that to me, I love the major championships now, especially more than ever before. And the Masters is pretty much, I would say it's the most popular major, certainly in the United States, maybe overseas and around the world. The Open Championship has more prestige. But the Masters is just so iconic because it's played the same course every single year. And so the course is as much of a star as the tournament itself. Somewhat like the Daytona 500. It's kind of like the Super Bowl comes first in the schedule. And when it comes to the majors, we start off with maybe the best one, maybe the one that every player wants to win the most. And what's cool about this year is that all of the players that went over to LIV Golf, who qualified for the majors, they are back now. The best golfers in the world from the PGA Tour and from LIV Golf are together again. It's not a watered-down field by any stretch of the imagination. How do you feel about that, Patrick?
I mean, yes, I'm great. They're coming back, but I don't want to sound negative. I'm going to sound negative. They left. That was their fault. They wanted to leave, and now they're complaining about wanting to have big fields, and they realize no one really watches LIV and no one really goes through the events. I'm glad they're back, but you know, it's unfortunate that they made the choice to go and be with a group that is funded by the Saudis. If they weren't funded by the Saudis, I wouldn't care as much, I guess. And mm-hmm. Again. You got me a little hot-headed here, Kale, about it. So, and I'll still watch the PGA Tour because there's still some great golfers, and good for those golfers who wouldn't have qualified for those events if the LIV players weren't in it. So they're going to take advantage of it.
And for those of you who watch the Golf Channel, and if you do, you know who Brandel Chamblee is. He's a somewhat controversial commentator to some. I think I like Brandel Chamblee personally. He is definitely anti-LIV for the reason that the money is directly coming from the Saudis, who, of course, were behind and funded the 9/11 terror attacks. But it's way more complicated than this now, I think, because of the fact that behind the players' backs, Jay Monahan, commissioner of the PGA Tour, was trying to cut a deal with the Saudis, trying to unify the two leagues. And all of the players who had stayed with the PGA Tour, for the reasons that you mentioned, Patrick, didn't take the money that was offered by the Saudis to jump to LIV. They were really upset when they found out about Monahan trying to cut a deal with them without their knowledge. And some have even said that Rory McIlroy, who was kind of the poster boy for the PGA Tour, he might even be considering making a jump to LIV, just as defending champion at the Masters John Rahm did. He's been grilled about this during the press conferences. He's been more than a little testy, I think, about this topic. So I wonder how that's going to affect his performance. I actually was going to pick Rahm to win, but I do think that all the controversy surrounding this is going to take away from his performance. I think there's pressure on him.
Well, one of the worries, too, is how much preparation, because he's not played as many rounds like they do in LIV. He's not played as many tournaments. So we'll see how that affects. Of course, last year, Phil Mickelson and Patrick Reed, who are LIV players, finished very well. I think finished
Phil
top
finished
five.
Second.
Yeah.
Phil is tied for second, which he kind of made a late charge. And but nobody's gone back-to-back since Tiger in 2001 and 2002. John Rahm is trying to do that. Okay, let's get into some picks right now. Let's start with producer Jim. I'm going to give you the honors here on the tee.
Well, great. Yeah. So my pick to win the Masters is Colin Morikawa.
Colin Morikawa. I'm always tempted to pick Morikawa for majors as well. He's such a great iron player, such a great ball striker, multiple major winner already. You got to be a good iron player to win at Augusta. So that's not a bad pick at all, Jim. That's not a bad pick at all. And what about your dark horse pick?
My dark horse pick is Charles Schwartzel.
Charles Schwartzel, the South African. Former Masters winner, by the way. He has a green jacket. So he was at the Champions Dinner on Tuesday night. It was hosted by John Rahm. A Spanish fare at that. I saw the menu. It looked pretty incredible. Charles Schwartzel, I'm trying to recall what year he won the Masters. Patrick,
I think
probably,
2011 or 2012. 2011.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it was 11. Yeah, but at any rate, you never know. He's also one of the LIV golfers, so there you go. All right, Patrick Alog, give me your winner and a dark horse.
All right, my winner pick, it's going to finally happen for him. Rory McIlroy. He's looking for the career Grand Slam. He's won the three of the four majors. He's not won a Masters. He's going to win it this year.
Yeah, he's come so close at Augusta. And he finished second 2 years ago. I remember he had that incredible hole out from the bunker on 18. But he's also had some real heartbreak at Augusta. I think it was back in, was it 2010 when he had that big meltdown?
I think 2010, something like that. He shot like plus 10, 10 over par in the 80s.
Yeah, it was really bad, and he hit it into somebody's backyard, not one of the holes in the back nine. It was, I don't know what hole that was, but yeah, Rory is a guy who's always a threat. If his game is on, and he showed some signs of life, pulling things together over the past week or two. What about your dark horse, Patrick?
You know, I had a dark horse, but you know what? After hearing that story about Gary Woodland, Gary Woodland is my dark horse.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Man, yeah. Why not? Just hearing that story, I was like, man, yeah, I want him to do really well.
He seems like a genuinely good guy. Mm-hmm. We did a story about Gary Woodland a couple years ago when he was, remember that story about him? And I can't remember the girl's name, the Special Olympian golfer that he was hanging out with. And he just seems like such a genuinely nice guy and a good family man. So yeah, wishing him very well during this tournament. And who knows? I mean, he's faced a lot more trouble than the 12th hole at Augusta, let's put it that way. And so he probably won't be feeling the pressure like he used to. I mean, he's just probably happy to be alive and on planet Earth and doing this. So yeah, that's a great pick, Patrick Alog. It's hard to root against that dark horse pick. All right, well, I'll tell you who I think is going to win this year. I can't go against Scottie Scheffler, the number one golfer in the world right now, and he, if his putter is okay, the only thing about his game is his somewhat wonky putter. But since Rory McIlroy, of all people, gave him a tip, said, hey, why don't you try using a mallet putter, he's been pretty solid with that. And as a ball striker, I don't think anybody can touch him on planet Earth right now. He did win in 2022, so I'm going with Scotty to win. Now, the person I'm going to pick for my dark horse pick. He actually finished very quietly, ninth last year. So he was top 10. Sahith Tigala. I'm going to go with him. He's a popular dark horse pick. But we'll see. I'm tempted to pick Tiger as a dark horse pick because he kind of is a dark horse, even though he did win it.
If he makes the cut, that's amazing enough, I think, if he makes the cut.
Yeah, his body has just been just racked. And Augusta is a tough course to... Apparently, when you go there, and I've never been there, I really want to go there 1 year. Apparently, the elevation changes are unbelievable when you go to Augusta. Like, it's so uphill in certain places. And with his wonky leg, it might be tough on him. But according to Freddie Couples, who played a practice round with him yesterday, he never missed a shot in the practice round. But then again, Freddie's like his biggest hype man ever, so they're really good friends. So we'll see, but it'd be awesome if Tiger could win another jacket. He says if he puts it all together, he can still do it. I wouldn't count him out. That's for sure. Well, I think we got to take a little break here. But when we come back, speaking of Scottie Scheffler, he was asked a really interesting question about his faith during the press conference at Augusta National just a couple of days ago. So we're going to play this for you right after the break. 888-914-9149. We'll have some time for your phone calls as well. 888-914-9149. If you want to react to anything that you've heard, five ways that our relationships can make us happier. If you want to throw in your own Masters picks, hey, I'd love to hear it. 888-914-9149. And we will be right back.
Faith, facts, and fun. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
I love it. Hootie. He's a big golf fan. Darius Rucker. That's not his real name. His real name is not Hootie. Hootie and the Blowfish is the band. Darius Rucker is the singer, guitarist there. Big sports fan. He was at the women's championship game. He's from South Carolina, so obviously he was cheering on for the Gamecocks as they were playing Caitlin Clark, Iowa Hawkeyes. The highest rated women's game of all time. Every game that she played in was progressively higher and higher. Caitlin Clark, 18, I think it was 18.1 million watched that game. Only 14.3, I think it was, watched the men's championship game between UConn and Purdue. So, wow, that's the first time that's ever happened. But having said that, let's get back to the Masters for just a second. I wanted to, just before your phone calls come in, 888-914-9149, I wanted to play you a clip from the press conference with world number one, Scottie Scheffler, the 2022 Masters champion. This is a really interesting question that a reporter asked him. So let me just play the first part. Check this out.
A lot of number one players in the world have admitted that they've had to be selfish with their time. They've had to work very hard because they were just about compulsive to stay on top. How would you say golf, where does it fit in defining you as a person right now?
Hopefully it doesn't define me too much because golf definitely is a selfish sport. You know, you're out there by yourself, and when you're at the peak of your game, you know, people need stuff from you a lot of the time, and you have to be selfish with your time. And it's not easy to say no, but you have to learn how to say no to certain people. And, cause ultimately when you come out to the golf tournament, you're here to compete and you're here to do your best, and you can't really get caught up in all the stuff that's going on around you. And so I'm hoping it doesn't define me too much because, I feel like I say it a bunch. Golf's something that I do. It's a tremendously huge part of my life, but it doesn't define me as a person. It's just something that I do, and I happen to be good at it some weeks. And, you know, I come in here and you guys ask all nice questions, and then the next week I'm bad at it. And then some of the questions are viewed more negatively. And that's just kind of the, you know, the ebb and flow of competing in front of people all the time.
I think that's a really interesting answer by Scottie Scheffler on a couple of fronts. I love the idea that what I do does not define me. So I guess he disagrees with Batman. If you ever saw Batman Begins, you know what I'm talking about. But I'm not going to do the Batman voice right now. It's just too much. But what I do does not define me. It's not who I am. It's something that I do, and I have bad days and good days. But being the best at something in the world, which Scottie Scheffler I think clearly is right now, or maybe John Rahm might have something to say about that this weekend. It's interesting to me. It reminded me of. There is a certain selfishness, as he says, especially in golf. It's a solitary sport. But to be really great, it does take a toll on people around you sometimes. And I remember Kobe Bryant talking about this, like the sacrifices that your family has to make. If you really to really excel at something, there's a price to be paid. There absolutely is a price to be paid. That's, I don't know, it just kind of made me think about that a little bit. But this idea of saying no, you have to, there's so many demands on your time. Especially once he won the Masters in 2022, there are so many more demands on your time. People that want you to do things, people that I don't know, sponsors, corporate opportunities, whatever. And if you give in to all that stuff, you might not be number one for very much longer. You've got to keep the main thing. And it reminded me of something that St. Jose Maria wrote in The Way, his collection of spiritual maxims. Point number five, it's very, very simple. Get used to saying no. Get used to saying no. That's actually incredibly good advice because we want to be accommodating to everybody. We want to say yes to everybody and everything in our lives. But here's the thing. If we say yes to things, it means we automatically are saying no to other things that we could be doing with our time. So if you say yes to that extra 20 minutes of scrolling on social media, you might be saying no to saying your rosary or something like that. Or if you're saying yes to workaholism and hanging out for that extra 2 hours in the office, you're really kind of saying no to your family in a certain way who you could be with. There's so many things we could say about that. But we do have to say a healthy no sometimes to things and people. And we talked a little bit about toxic people earlier in the program in order to do what God wants us to do. And there's actually a book. This isn't a spiritual book at all, by the way. There's another book that I read a few years ago called Essentialism by this guy named Greg McKeown. That was a really interesting book as well about this whole idea of boiling life down to what's truly essential. And that involves saying no. And that can be a very, very healthy thing. Anyways, so here's the second part of the answer that Scottie Scheffler gave to this reporter, because there's another sort of mini question that he was asked about his faith specifically. Check this out.
Can I follow up? What do you think defines you?
Gosh, I don't know. You probably have to ask my wife. I'm a faithful guy. I believe in a creator. I believe in Jesus. Ultimately, I think that's what defines me the most. I feel like I've been given a platform to compete and, you know, show my talent. It's not anything that I did. You know, I think I sat up here a couple of years ago doing the interview after the 2022 Masters, and it's like, yeah, I was underprepared for what was about to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't, you know, I was very anxious that morning. I didn't know what to expect. And it's hard to describe the feeling, but I think that's what defines me the most is my faith. You know, I believe in one creator, and I've been called to come out here, do my best, compete, and glorify God, and that's pretty much it.
That's awesome. That is such an incredible answer, and he does define himself in Jesus Christ. He's not a Catholic. Pray that he will be one day, but he's certainly a guy who takes his faith seriously and is not afraid to talk about it publicly. Patrick Alog, what are your thoughts on Scheffler's comments?
You know, when he talked about the time that, you know, that it takes, you know, to be number one in the world and some of the commitments and stuff, once you become like that star player, people are just asking you, do this, do this, do this. Yeah. And sometimes when you do all that kind of stuff, it takes away from the practice and in terms of, and because with that practice, that's how you got to be number one in the world. Yeah. So I remember a priest saying how all the time he would just say no initially to almost any request. And then afterwards, if it would become a yes, it's easier to say no and then yes later. As opposed to say, yes, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do it anymore.
That's a good point. We sometimes overextend ourselves a little bit. And we got to keep up the spiritual practice that we do, too. You can't be number one in the world without spending a lot of time in the practice range. We need our spiritual practices as well to play well in the spiritual life. And I keep threatening to write a book about golf and the spiritual life called In His Grip. One day, maybe I'll do it. It'll be full of puns, I can promise you that. So let's take a phone call right now. Let's go to Joe in New Jersey. Hello, Joe.
Good evening. Okay. I had a stage 4 brain cancer and I had nasal cancer too at the same time.
Goodness.
Jesus was my best friend. And when I went in for the surgery, I did not have the slightest bit of anxiety. I prayed with the doctors and I said to the doctors, I know you know what you're doing. God's with you. And right now I'm doing very well. And on the lighter side of things, there was a major study done over the years that's consistently the same. Six out of seven dwarfs are not happy.
Only one is happy.
I have two very good friends, and I have five brothers in the Franciscan Order of the Renewal over in Patterson that are very good friends. So I consider myself very lucky. Jesus is number one, though.
Wow, Joe, thank you so much for that phone call. And wow, that's a double dose of cancer there. And I'm so glad that you're still fighting to this day. And thank you so much for that phone call on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Well, I just want to put a bug in your ear. Like I said earlier in the program, tomorrow on the Faith Explained Show, we're going to dive into a little bit the theology of the body. So that'll be at 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio. And we talked about this body-soul unity. This is the way God created us, absolutely. And if you missed today's Faith Explained show, we talked about, speaking of sports, something that you see at a lot of games, specifically football games, the old bedsheet banner with a Bible verse written on it, the most famous Bible verse that there is. John 3:16. So we talked a little bit about that because that was the gospel reading for today at Mass. John 3:16 was part of it, this conversation between Jesus and Nicodemus at night, Nick at night. What's Jesus really saying here? Did Jesus himself even say John 3:16, or was that the narrator of the Gospel of John? Well, if you want the answers to that, and also we had a really fun Q&A question about why do priests wear black, and also the origins of the cassock. So not to be missed. So check the podcast for today's episode of The Faith Explained on Relevant Radio. So speaking of priests who wear black and have cassocks, Father Rocky will be along later for the Family Rosary Across America, but not before Timory, the birthday girl. Is she back tonight, Jim? Fantastic. It was Timory's birthday yesterday, so if you didn't get a chance to wish her happy birthday, maybe you should call in. Training with Timory is coming up next on Relevant Radio. This is Cale Clark. This has been The Cale Clark Show. Once again, check the podcast if you missed any episodes of this or any other of our fine programming on Relevant Radio. Get the Relevant Radio app. It's free. Download it. It is awesome. And you can listen to and share all of our shows in podcast form and stream live 24/7, 365. So thankful for you guys. So thankful for listening to the program. Thankful for producer Jim Schaefer. Thankful for Patrick Alog, who joined me also today. Made our picks. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.